You're listening to a podcast from Streams Church in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. For more audio and visual content, visit streamschurch.org.
We are continuing our conversation today. Jeremiah started last week with a conversation about the woman that Jesus encountered at the well, found in John 4. She was a Samaritan woman. If you weren't here last week, I would encourage you to listen to the podcast because he was outstanding. It was an outstanding message. But we are following up, and I'm kind of taking the second half of John 4, and that's what we're looking at today. And when I was thinking about last week and kind of where do I want to go with this, I came down to a question that I think we have to answer. And that question is, how do we respond to God's desire to be known by us? How do we respond? So we just bought a house. Yay. Yes, our young adults love it because they come on Wednesdays. It's a little bit bigger, which is nice because they were, actually, I think we bought it because we're like, there's a lot of them. They just keep growing, so we need more space. So we moved. So we started the process. Now, we've been looking for 2 years, and this is the first time that we've looked and not been moving to a new job. So this was a different experience. And we lived in this house over in South Goodyear, basically California. It's like so far away, it felt like. Seriously, the sign is California. That's the next stop. So I'm like, it was really far. So we lived there for 9 years. That's a long time for me to live in one house. 3 years was my max because of the military life I lived. So 9 years was like, wow. I had remodeled my kitchen, and I loved my little house. And so 2 years ago when Alan kind of suggested, you know, maybe we need to start thinking about, you know, closer to the church and the community over there. And I'm like, I don't want to move. I love my house. And, of course, the Lord worked on my heart. And so we, you know, finally, I was like, okay, we can look. And so we started looking about 2 years ago. I mean, not like all the time, but, you know, we would keep our eyes open. And if we saw something that we thought was interesting, we'd go look at it. And it was interesting because I remembered in this process how different Alan and I are. Can we just cut those lights that are blinking? Because I can see everyone's like, I'm going to have a panic attack. And they're not going to hear anything. It's okay. I know it's going to make it darker, but I feel like we might need to do that. So that everyone who is like, please, we can't focus on what Shannon is saying. Ooh. That's not bad. We can handle that. I'm glad I'm wearing pink. Matches the lights. Is that better? Should I start over? No, I'm not starting over. Okay. So anyway, so we started this process of house buying, and I remembered how different Alan and I are. Because Alan, before we would look at any house, he had already crunched the numbers. He already did the spreadsheet. We already knew if this was in our budget. Well, those are boring things in my mind. And so we would walk in the house that we thought we could look at, and he's like thinking about numbers, and I'm like, I just want to know if my couch will look good in this living room and if the dishes will match with the kitchen. Those are the things that matter. So obviously the boring stuff is kind of crucial, and so I get that, and I'm thankful that we balance each other out. If Alan was in charge of buying the house without my opinion, I just don't know what we would live in. It would be really basic. That's just my husband. It would be basic. And I don't like basic. I like extras and fun. So it was a good process. But what it made me think of was that, you know, really so many things in our life come down to a bottom line. Like there's a bottom line. When you are buying a house, there's a bottom line. We looked at the money and said, okay, bottom line, this is what we can afford. So we didn't go look at houses $100,000 over our budget because that would have been foolish, right? That wasn't in our budget. There's a bottom line in that process. And if you own a business or just in work in general, bottom lines matter because you can't, you know, you've got to be able to buy product and pay your employees and all these things that come down to, well, what's my bottom line? What I'm bringing in, what I'm going out, investing and returning. That's in our culture. That's just kind of what we live in. And I think what happens a lot is that we tend to let that bleed over into our interactions with each other. And the way we see each other and our interactions with God, too. It all becomes about the investment. Is this worthy of my time? What's my return going to be? And we tend to see people that way sometimes. What are we doing, God? It must be the Holy Spirit. He is here. Are we okay? Okay, we're okay. We're just going to keep going and pretend like it's not happening. I feel like we should have a disco party. Wow. Okay. I think we're okay. Carrying on. So, where was I? Oh, so the bottom line. So, We live in a bottom line culture, and that bleeds into the way we view God and the way we view each other and the way we choose to interact with each other. If we're honest, we do make choices about who and what we're investing in based on what we think the return will be. And we're looking today at the second part of the Samaritan woman's story that Jeremiah told last week. And I think that Jesus speaks to this exact idea that we see things as bottom lines and investment return, but he's like, I don't see it the same way you do. And he's wanting the disciples to get this. And I want to back up a bit because I want us to understand the context. So, you know, we know that Jeremiah told us last week that Jesus and his disciples are on a journey and they choose to go by the Samaritan village, which is way outside of normal anyway, because the Jews hated the Samaritans. And that's not like, I'm not exaggerating. They hated them so much that they would purposely avoid going, they would go the long way just to avoid passing their village. That's how much they hated them. But of course, Jesus is like, we're going to go right past it. And so they come upon the well, because every village, there's a well outside of the village, and the women would come to this well every day to draw their water. It was like the Facebook of the day. Like, that's where you went to find out what was going on. And so Jesus stops and sits down on the side of the well because he's tired, and he's thirsty. And he asks the woman for a drink, and of course, we know from last week that they have a conversation, and in that conversation, Jesus reveals himself as the Messiah, and she's a little unsure, and then he says, go call your husband, and she's like, well, I don't have one. And he says, I know, you've had five. And she, her eyes are opened. And she's like, you are the Messiah. And so she's so excited because this man is like telling her, he knows everything she ever did, but he's choosing to talk to her. He's choosing to give her the time of day. He's choosing to invest in her. And she's so excited. So we're going to focus on the disciples for a minute today because they're quite comical. And we want to see how we can relate to them. So verse 27, this is what it says. Just then, his disciples came back. They were shocked to find him talking to a woman, but none of them had the nerve to ask, what do you want with her, or why are you talking to her? The woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could he possibly be the Messiah? So the people came streaming from the village to see him. Okay, so we don't have to even guess. We know, because it says, the disciples are shocked to come back with food for Jesus and find him talking to this woman. And I'm a visual person, so I visualize the story. And what I see is Jesus hanging out at the well with this woman, and I see them rushing towards him and just kind of stopping back here. Like, there's the well. And they're like, does he know what he's doing? And they're clustered because they tend to do that. They're all, you know, they're like, does he know who she is? And I just think that that's exactly what they're doing. They're talking to each other like, should we tell him? I don't know if he knows. Like, does he know she's Samaritan? He wouldn't talk to her if he knew. Well, I'm not going to say anything. You say something. That's basically what's happening. The disciples, okay? Totally, totally shocked. Yet Jesus has just spent this time with this woman. He's revealed himself to her. And she, being dry and thirsty, responds with a yes. And I love it because it says that she left her water jar, which means she was like, I don't want anything to slow me down. I've got to get back to my village and tell them this good news. So she leaves her water jar and she's running back to her village. Now, Jesus is probably still sitting there by the well, waiting for her to come back with all of her villagers. And the disciples are probably panicking because they're about to be swarmed by Samaritans, and they're just a little bit stressed out about it, okay? And that's where we pick up today. Verse 32, this is what it says. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. Then his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? Again, the disciples. If they can be disciples, so can we. Because they just don't get it, ever. They never seem to get that Jesus is always talking about something different. He's never talking about what you think he's talking about. Did someone feed him and we just missed it? And so Jesus, maybe he rolled his eyes at them. Maybe. I don't know. Can't say that. But I feel like he had the right to. But he is frustrated. We know that. Continues on. Verse 34. My food, said Jesus, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Don't you have a saying, it's still 4 months until harvest? I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest. Now, I did a little research on this portion of the scripture because I was like, okay, I want to see the scene. So the well was outside of town, which is also where the fields would have been. So they lived in the village, and they would leave and come from the village to the fields to work and then go back in the evenings. So where they're at right now, waiting on the Samaritans to come, there's fields all around them. And Jesus loves to use visual illustrations to tell us stories. He tells us stories because he knows that that will help us understand. And so Jesus is looking out at the fields, And then he says this really weird thing. Don't you have a saying? It's still 4 months until harvest. And I was like, what does that mean? Don't you have a saying? So I looked it up. So that saying in their context would be the same as us going, what's your hurry? What's your rush? It's still 4 months till harvest. That's literally how they would have, that's why they would have said it. So Jesus is saying, you have a saying, we're not in a hurry. We got time. And I tell you, look around. The field is ripe and ready for harvest. Now, the disciples think all of this is going to happen in a very specific order that they have in their minds. For all these generations, Israel has heard the prophecy of the Messiah that's coming. And they've created their own versions of that. And so what the disciples think at this point is, we're just traveling around and we're just letting people know the Messiah's come. He's doing all these awesome miracles. It's all great. And then when the time is right, he's going to conquer Rome and give us back our authority and go God. That is what they think is going to happen. And of course Jesus knows this because nothing ever goes past his notice. He notices everything. And he is trying to get into their heads. This is not what you think it is. It's not going to go how you think it's going to go. So verse 36, it says, even now, this is Jesus, the one who reaps draws a wage and harvests a crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one sows and another reaps, is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. So he's using the illustration of the field and the worker, and he's going, what you know is that there's an owner of the field and everyone comes to work the field, and then the owner receives the profit and then the profit is distributed among the workers. But he's like, that's not how it works in my kingdom. It's different in my kingdom. It's not you sow and you get money because you sowed, and then you reap and you get money because you reaped. He says, we do it together. Everyone works my field and everyone works together. See, it's not about who owns the field and who does the most work and what's your status and what's your position. That's not what it's about. That is what I call transactional living. And we're all guilty of that at times. What am I going to get out of this moment? What am I going to get out of you if I choose to invest right now in you? That's how we're trained to think. That's how the disciples are trained to think. This was very counterculture to what they knew. It would never have occurred to the disciples to go to this village. Never. Unless Jesus had done it. They never would have understood that Jesus has come for us all. Because they were so set that he had come just to rescue the Jews. So this is like shattering the foundation of what they think they know about who God is and who Jesus is. Jesus wants them to see something. People are not transactions. People are not bottom lines. You are not filling your personal barn with your harvest. He says, that's not how this works. See, they had lived generations in the culture of an eye for an eye. Whatever you sow is what you reap. It was always balanced that way. And Jesus is going, that's not my kingdom. See, to see people differently and to see what Jesus is talking about, we have to understand time. We're obsessed with time. Like everything in our life revolves around time, right? Hurrying to get here, hurrying to get there. Do I have time to meet you? Do I have time to do this? Alan gave me a word for what we live in our world, and I had to go look up the definition because I was like, what does that mean? He said, we live in a linear world. I was like, linear? What does that mean? So I went and looked it up. Linear means things happening in a sequential, patterned order. If you think about our world and the life that we live, everything tends to happen in this physical world in a sequential order, right? There's an order to things. I don't have a green thumb. I have a black thumb. But my new house has this amazing, like, secret garden, like, backyard that I inherited. Like, it's amazing. There's even a pond that trickles. Like, I'm sure it's like the Garden of Eden-ish. That's how I feel when I go back there. And I'm like, it's mine, and I didn't create it, but I'm really terrified that I'm going to destroy it. Because I, like, my house is where plants come to die. So I considered it a step of faith that we chose this house because I'm like, all right, Jesus, I've got this entire backyard to keep alive. So I have this beautiful grapefruit tree. And then in the other corner, I have an orange tree. There are so many grapefruits on this tree. Like, so you can all come get a grapefruit because there are going to be so many grapefruits. Yeah, I'm so excited and also going to probably be overwhelmed by grapefruits. But we'd been in the house for like not even a couple, it was like a couple weeks. And, you know, the house, the tree, I mean, it has like the dark, deep green leaves and the fruits hanging on the tree. And it's like, it's going to be ready soon. And then all of a sudden, I noticed one day I'm sitting at the table. I look out the window. I'm like, there's some different looking leaves on the tree. They're like lime greenish looking and they're kind of waxy. And I freaked out. And so I didn't know what to do because, like I said, I know nothing. And so I called Pastor Lloyd because he has fruit tree expert knowledge. So I'm like, PL, I need you to come look at my tree because I'm very stressed out that I've already done something wrong and I'm killing it. And so one Wednesday after staff meeting, he came over with Alan. And he looked at me and he's like, Shannon, your tree is amazing. He's like, that's new leaves growing on the tree. And I was like, oh, I was so scared that I was destroying it. He's like, no, it's new leaves because it's going to grow new leaves and have new fruit when you. I was like, okay. So I thought that was amazing that the grapefruits aren't even ready yet, but the tree knows to start creating new life so that the new, when it's time for the new grapefruits, they'll be ready. And even though I don't know a lot, I know that when the grapefruit is ready, it's going to be this like really beautiful yellowish pinkish color. We think it's pink grapefruits. Is that a thing? Pink or red? Wow, I know nothing, guys. I love grapefruit, but I just go to the produce section and pick it up, and I don't think about where it came from. So, but I know when it's ready, it's going to be this beautiful color. And I know that when it's ready to be picked, it's not going to be hard to get it off the tree. I'm just going to do this, and it's going to come off. That's life that we live. Anything in this world that comes to life has to follow a sequence, an order. You can watch the cycle happen. But God's kingdom is not linear. It is eternal. He does not think and work on our timetable. In his kingdom, a seed can be sown in a very unlikely place. And a harvest can come where you think it should take days and weeks and months and years. It can come like that. Because his kingdom's not linear. It's eternal. See, Jesus is trying to get his disciples to understand like the crux of the matter here. He's saying, you have got to stop seeing this is all about you. You've got to understand that this is a greater story being told, and you just get to be a part of it. That this is a team effort. This is not every man for himself. This is every man for every man. That's what he's wanting his disciples to understand. Of course, we know that they're going to understand, because when he comes, when he's, you know, on the cross, and he's resurrected, and it's like, then they get it. And then they're going to go out into all the world and spread their seeds. I posed the question when I started today that how do we respond to God's desire to be known by us? What do I do with that? Because you do need to do something with it. And so I got to thinking about how that's been in my life, because that's a journey for me. I didn't know God 9 years ago. I knew of God. But I didn't know him. And I've been on a journey of knowing him. And what I can think of that has been the most impactful and the most life-changing thing for me is just getting in a secret place with Jesus on a regular basis. That's how I respond. He says, I'd love to sit with you, Shannon. And I say, okay, let's sit. And we talk. And I just spend time with him. And I commune with him. And it's not hard. It brings me peace, and it brings me rest, and it brings me joy. And here's the crazy, awesome, only God can do this thing. In that, in me doing that, he toils and tills up the soil in my heart. He plants fresh new seed, and he waters it, and that seed starts to grow. And from that seed grows new life and fruit. And so here's what's so great. The planting that he's asking you to do and the planting he's asking me to do, it comes from the seed inside of us. It's not hard. It doesn't mean you toil and you sweat and you're exhausted because you just, it comes from the fruit that is so overwhelming, like my grapefruit tree, so much bounty that I could never keep it to myself. I must share it with anyone who will take it. That's the same way it is when we choose to join Jesus in this harvest that he's asking us to join him in. I compare it a little bit to, you know, we all have sometimes things happen that, like, you can't wait to tell somebody. And because of Facebook, that's where we go to tell everybody, you know. And we sold our other house on Thursday. Thank you, Jesus. After 47 days, we're like, come on, Jesus. We finally sold it. And so I was waiting for Alan to say, okay, you can tell. Because I knew there were people that had been praying with us, and I wanted to let everyone know. So I posted it on Facebook, because, like, that's what you do. And I was, like, so excited to tell everyone, and then all the people were like, yay, you know. Because when we have something exciting to share, do we want to keep it to ourselves? No. We want someone to celebrate with us. It's the same way. And that is what Jesus is trying to help us understand. He's like, guys, I need you to understand who I am. Because if you understood, you'd be running with her back to the Samaritan village. And you would be come out and meet a man who told us everything we ever did. And he loves us anyway. That is what it means to join Jesus in the harvest. See, what Jesus has done in me, it's too good to keep to myself. It's too important for me to worry about where I'm sowing and who is sowing it and how I'm going to reap it. It's too important for me to worry about bottom lines and the returns I'm going to get, because it's eternal. The seeds Jesus is asking us to sow, they last forever. There actually is a bottom line in this story, and it is this. All that matters to Jesus is people. You, me, and everyone around us. That's what matters to Jesus. And he is yearning for someone to join him, because he says, look around. It's a harvest that's ready. I have prepared the way for you. You can go and you can reap where you did not sow. Join me in the harvest. I think of hope as fire, because that's just what it has felt like in my life as the Lord has come to me and just kind of healed my heart and my soul and just brought so much into my life that I just never even fathomed. It's like a fire that has caught. And fire, the nature of fire is that it spreads, right? Unless it's contained. And that is exactly what this thing with Jesus, this is supposed to spread. And it's not supposed to be because you have to convince someone. It's just, let me tell you what Jesus has done in me. Let me tell you my story. That is what the Samaritan woman did. Her whole village comes out. We're not reading the last part of the story, but the whole village comes because they're like, well, wow, if he talked to you and he knew all that, he must be something. And the whole village is saved, an entire village, because one woman, who we would have never considered worthy of an investment, she got it. And she ran back and she said, let me tell you my story. I met this man. Come and meet him. He told me everything I ever did. And he loves me anyway. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. I'm sure you can tell this is a deep, like, in my bones kind of message, because this is my heart. The Lord has burdened my heart as I've healed and discovered what he purposed in my pain and the ways that he can take all of the story and turn it to good. I've become passionate about telling anybody who will listen. And I've told Jesus, you just keep put me in front of anyone, one person, two people, 10 people, have me, and I will tell them of your goodness. I will share from the bounty of what you have done in me. And I've been going downtown for almost 3 years working with an organization that it's called the Fountain of Hope, and we work with trafficked girls on 27th Avenue, which Arizona, we're in the top five of the country for trafficking. And so 27th Avenue is the hotbed of trafficking. I mean, girls are just on the streets getting picked up. It's just very heartbreaking. And it's hard to go down there because I can feel the weight of the oppression. And I can feel it breaking Jesus's heart when I'm there. So it's not easy, but he called me there, and I've been going, and I go pretty much once a month, one Saturday a month. And it's such a simple thing that we do. We cook waffles and eggs, and we just feed them breakfast. We offer them breakfast. We go out and invite them in. Hey, are you hungry? We give them a little lotion with a thing attached that says, you're God's princess. And we just offer them breakfast, because most of them are living like homeless girls and they don't get a good meal ever. And so we bring them in and we feed them. And I've really learned a lot about this concept of what it means to sow and not really know what you're reaping from it. And I was there a couple months ago. And I'm out on the streets, whatever, but this time I stayed in, and one of our volunteers brought this, I say woman, more like girl. I mean, she's barely 18. And the signs were there of trafficking. And she came in and she just had a sweetness about her, which is unusual in this because they get hardened by the life they're living. But she still had this sweetness in her, I think, because she was young. And we took her to the back. And when we have shoes and socks, we give them a pair because they usually come to us in like tattered, worn out. Whatever they're wearing is usually worn out. And so if we have the socks and the shoes to give them, and I'm always collecting socks and shoes, we give them a pair. And so we took her to the back where we had all the shoes, and she sat down and she took off her shoes and her socks, and her feet were filthy. And she had blisters. And Susan, who runs the fountain, she said, "Would you like a bucket? We can to soak your feet." And she said yes. And so we got her a bucket and some warm soapy water, and she started soaking her feet, and she just, tears just started to trail her face. And she said, "I don't know why I'm crying, but I just feel like I can just sit here and cry." And so I sat with her for a minute, just let her soak. And then the Lord spoke so heavy to me and said, "I want you to wash her feet." Now, I don't want you to think I'm holy. I've never washed anyone's feet. But I heard him so clear. And so I said, her name was Mercedes. I said, "Mercedes, would it be all right if I washed your feet?" And she said, "Yeah, that's fine." And she's just wiping tears. And I knelt down and I got some rags and I started washing her feet. And I said, "Mercedes, my best friend, he did this once for his best friends. I said he wanted them to know how much he loved them and what it meant to be in relationship with him. And so he washed their feet. And his name is Jesus. And he asked me to do this for you because he wants you to know that he loves you so very much. By all of the world's standards, she's a Samaritan woman. Not worthy of the investment because I may not get a return." And she just kept weeping and she was asking questions and just, she was open. And that's unusual. They don't always come in open. And I've learned down there, there's no pretense. You can just ask the very honest, hard questions and they'll tell you. And most of the time they're on some drug because that's how their traffickers keep them coming back for drugs. I said, "Are you clean, Mercedes?" And she said, I've been clean for 2 days. And I said, would you like to get out?" And we don't always get to say that because they don't always come and we don't always feel that freedom, but we felt the freedom to ask her. I said, "Mercedes, would you like out? I have a place I can take you right now. I have a place that has a bed for you and you can get a detox and then you can get into a program." And I was like, "We can do it right now." And she's just crying. She's like, I want to. And so we got her cleaned up and she got socks and she got shoes. And then she asked, she's like, "Well, can we go back to where I've been staying? And I just have a bag of stuff." And we kind of, it depends on case by case because we don't really want them to go back where they were because you may not get them back. But at the same time, sometimes they have this one blanket from their childhood. And if you don't let them go get it, it's like they've just lost everything. And so we felt like in this, we're like, felt like, okay, we'll take you. And so me and another volunteer took her to the place that she was staying. And I said, "Okay, Mercedes, I can only wait for 10 minutes. 10 minutes. And then you come out and I'll take you." And I knew taking her that I might not see her again. I sure was hoping. And 20 minutes, I sat, of course, I waited 20 minutes. And the volunteer with me, we just sat, we just prayed. "Jesus, please open her eyes. Please bring her back." And we didn't see her again. And I left that day, and I was just so broken for her. And I cried on the way home, and I just was weeping. And I just said, "Jesus, I really wanted her to get out." And he said something to me. He said, "Thank you for planting that seed." He said, "I will make sure it gets watered. And you can guarantee it's going to be reaped." Because he showed me that now he has a little bottle in heaven and it has Mercedes' name on it. And he's collecting all the prayers and all the tears and everything said over her. He's keeping it and he knows her and he sees her. That is what it means to plant, to sow, to reap. We don't do it because of what we will get out of it. We do it because Jesus is worthy of it, because he earned his place in our lives by giving his all. He has earned his place, and he is worthy of us going to anyone who will listen and saying, "Let me tell you about my best friend and what he has done." It's not work, friends. It comes from the bounty of who he is inside of us. I invite you to stand. I know that this is not a feel-good message. We're not leaving today like all, you know, pumped up, but hopefully we are leaving a little bit pumped up in a different way. Hopefully we're leaving and we're going to see the world around us as not just, are you worthy of my time and what's my return on this investment and what's the bottom line? Maybe we could start to see the world around us as seeds ready for us to be planting, crops ready to be harvested. See, here's what I've learned in my own life. Jesus is a very faithful farmer. He has plowed and farmed my heart, and he kept doing it even when I was like, this is too hard, I don't want to do this. He just kept plowing. He kept doing it until there was fruit. And he's like, okay, now go share it. You got something to share, so go share it. And so I'm challenging you today, friends, to join Jesus in his harvest. Because people, that's all we get to take to heaven. That's all that matters in eternity, is the souls that we take with us. And you can share it with anyone who's in front of you. Jesus, I thank you that you are a faithful farmer, that you don't give up on us, that you are willing to talk to the Samaritan woman, you're willing to make room for the girl who's trafficked and so broken and lost. You say, please sit down with her and wash her feet, because I need that seed to be planted. And Jesus, I just ask that today as we leave, you would show us the ways that we can plant seeds and reap your harvest. May we be filled with your fire to go into the highways and the byways and the grocery stores and our neighbors and say, let me tell you about Jesus. He is everything. Jesus, fill us with passion for you, your name, your glory, to see people, this broken, lost world, come into salvation, be harvested. Thank you for letting us be a part of what you're doing. What an honor it is to plow next to you, to plant next to you, to reap with you. What an honor it is, Jesus. Fill us with the desire for what breaks your heart so that we can be farmers with you.
This has been a podcast from Streams Church in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit streamschurch.org.